from ACB Radio Mainstream. Welcome to Tuesday Topics. Over the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to persons who are blind or visually impaired. Now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
I am Paul Edwards from Miami, Florida, and I'd like to welcome everyone to Tuesday Topics this evening. We're a little unsure just how this particular version of Tuesday Topics will come out, but that happens to be true of a number of our programs. So, that being said, we will carry on. Let me first thank our producer, Mr. Brian Charlson, for his input and also for his direct participation as a major contributor to this evening's program as well. As usual, I would like to thank Steve Bauer, who is far more than just an editor. Steve actually makes this program, for the most part, what it is. Steve is also responsible for a new development this week that I would like to let everyone know about, and that is we are now the proud possessors, Tuesday Topics are, of an email address. If you have information or questions or concerns or ideas, thoughts for guests, would like to be a guest yourself, give us an email at Tuesday Topics. TuesdayTopics at acbradio.org, acbradio.org. That's our new email address, and we would certainly be glad to hear from you. Also, of course, I would be remiss were I not to express my appreciation to George Buys, whose software we are using to record this program. What are we talking about this evening? Well, Brian and I are somewhat politically attuned, and we recognize that we are beginning to approach the primary season. And as a result of that, Brian and I began to talk about what we were planning to do with Tuesday Topics with regard to elections. We both think that at some point closer to the time of elections, we'll certainly do something on the current state of voting machines, and there are certainly interesting things happening there. We will almost certainly as well at some point do a program that tries to gather what some of the political issues that we think candidates ought to be considering that relate to those of us who are blind, visually impaired, or disabled. But this early, we felt as though there might be some point in exploring an issue that really we've heard very little about. And both Brian and I found it intriguing. I don't know how much Brian's been involved in presidential campaigns. I really spent one election very actively working on a presidential campaign as well as working for a political party, and I'm sure that we'll spend some time talking about that as time rolleth along. But the question that we had was, how many blind people actually get involved in campaigning for people in Congress, how many people get involved in campaigning for president, for governor, for mayor, for county commission? And we couldn't think of very many people who we knew who had been actively involved in such campaigns. And so one of the issues that we thought might come out of things tonight is to explore why that is. Are there misconceptions about what the expectations of campaigns are? Is there prejudice that precludes people from getting involved? Are people who are disabled not allowed to do key jobs, are simply not trusted to do key jobs, and are relegated to doing grunt work? By the way, there are an awful lot of people in campaigns who do grunt work. Somebody said at one point that 80% of a campaign is stuffing envelopes. That may not be quite as true in 2007, but I don't think it's far from it. So let me pass it to Brian, who might perhaps respond to some of the speculations that I've raised in my introduction. And as the evening wears along, we shall see who drops by, and we will try to explore the whole issue, not of what can you do for me, Mr. Politician, but what can I do for you. Mr. Charlson.
You know, one of the things that I think is important for everybody to understand who are listening this evening is what our credentials are to even have an opinion on this subject, Paul. So I'm going to at least begin by describing mine. I have a degree in political science from a small university out in Oregon, my home state, in political science. I originally became involved in the world of politics when I was quite young, 18 years of age. I ran for Republican precinct committeeman. I was in my conservative phase at the time, was elected and served on that board for 2 years in my home county of Clackamas, and became rather disenchanted with what was the Oregon Republican Party at the time, which was very much the classic, if you will, idea of supporting business and that kind of thing, and being careful that we don't overwhelm ourselves with too many things in terms of social services. I then quit the party and joined the Democrat Party and ran for Democrat precinct committee person, was elected, went to my first few meetings, and found myself in rather the opposite situation, a classically liberal group of individuals who believed that all things Republican were bad and filthy and all things Democrat were good and noble and humanistic, etc., etc., and what can I do for you, dear, kind of attitude of about me as a person with a disability showing up in the halls of government. I then ran for the board of directors of the local community college against the incumbent, who also happened to be a state representative, lost miserably, but had a fun time running my own campaign along with many of my college buddies. And eventually worked for the Oregon State Legislature as the assistant sergeant-at-arms for the state Senate, got to know lots of politicians in the real world, finished my degree, and the rest is kind of history. So I've been involved with this literally from the day I was eligible to vote at all, and have been involved in campaigns, like I said, from my own days, running for the community college board, up through three presidential campaigns at one point or another, doing a lot of stuffing of envelopes, making phone calls, and that kind of stuff. So I do think that, in fact, it's an important issue for us to discuss as a constituency, whether or not, or at what point ought we to consider ourselves part of the campaign rather than a topic for discussion by politicians. I'd like to see us all involved, because I really don't believe that if one is going to demand things by those who hold elective office, that one ought to be simply a person who's coming to the party demanding rather than bringing anything else to that celebration, like true roll-up-your-sleeves work in the trenches.
Thank you, Brian. I guess with a view to fair and equal disclosure, I should talk a little bit about my political history as well. Somewhat different than yours, I have a bachelor's degree in history from a branch of the University of London, and a master's degree in international relations, which was acquired in Trinidad, but was offered under the auspices of the Institut de Relations Internationaux de Genève in Switzerland, or the Institute of International Relations in Switzerland, and was active in union politics in Trinidad, where I ended up living and teaching high school history for 10 years. The union politics was interesting because while it was possible to be a member of the union, it wasn't possible to play the kind of role that I really would have enjoyed playing. And the longer I stayed there, the tougher it became to be a union steward, which is one of the things that I was trying to be. So ended up leaving Jamaica and coming back to, or leaving Trinidad, excuse me, and coming back to the States. And really wasn't politically active except in terms of disability and blindness issues for quite a long time. Voted at every election, regarded voting as really very much a sacred right. And then in 1990, I guess, got pretty active in work for libraries and ended up at the White House Conference on Libraries and Information Services. And as a result of that, a number of us came back to Florida and decided that based on our experiences at the White House Conference, that there was this huge gap that we suddenly recognized. There wasn't really a place where people with disabilities were very widely accepted in those days in political parties. And so a bunch of us decided that it would be kind of cool to become actively involved in Democratic politics. And we ended up creating one of the first disability caucuses in the state Democratic Party. This was also in 1991, and interestingly enough, of course, this was the year that Bill and Hillary Clinton did their campaigning, and so we were one of the organizations that responsible for giving Bill and Hillary a very unexpected victory in the straw poll at the Florida Democratic Party caucus. The Democratic caucus in Florida for disability issues lasted for another, 4 years, I guess. And a lot of us became very disillusioned with the whole exercise. And should we want to discuss why that is, I'd certainly be glad to do that. I remained pretty active in the first Clinton campaign, but beyond that, really, haven't actively participated. Did lots of envelope stuffing, lots of telephone calling, a little bit of public speaking. I don't think it gained anything for me. I don't think it gained very much for disability politics, but it's hard to know. Certainly Bill Clinton remained loyal to the disabled population and is the only president that I know of who actually held what amounted to a disability summit at the White House, where both he and Al Gore met with a number of us who were disability leaders later in the 90s. So that's a little bit more about kind of my political history. I haven't been actively involved in campaigns since then, and it may be interesting to ask why. It does have a lot to do with the fact that the campaigns haven't really caused me to jump up and down, but that may be an unfair kind of way to judge whether I should get involved or not. So any thoughts on my history, Brian, or any questions? I will, in a moment, have a couple for you.
Just, I wonder how, because of the international nature of your beginnings, you feel about U.S. politics as opposed to politics in other nations. Do you feel that the way we do politics here in the United States opens the door to more participation by persons with disabilities or less than the other countries you've been in and places you've been educated?
That's a tough one. There actually, probably per capita, are more disabled people who get elected to political office outside of the United States than in it. There certainly have been a number of blind people, both in the Caribbean and in the UK, who've risen pretty high in terms of politics. And there seems to be more room because of the local nature of campaigns in the UK and in the British system. There seems to be more room for people to get involved as folks with disabilities. I really didn't get very involved in political campaigns in the Caribbean, but I think that was largely because I perceived myself as perceived as being an outsider. Even though I didn't want to see myself that way, the longer that countries like Jamaica and Trinidad became independent, the more it became necessary in their eyes to write some revisionist histories and to cast roles for colonial white populations, whether they were true or not, that made it more difficult for people to actually participate politically. I think there's lots of room in the U.S. for people with disabilities to participate in campaigns. I've not seen any signs that say keep off the grass. I think it is intriguing that we, who are pretty politically active within ACB, know of very few people who've been involved in political campaigns, and it's a sort of a fascinating issue. Intriguingly enough, it may be that our alter ego, NFB, does a better job of getting involved in political campaigns than we do.
You might be right in that respect. The politics that I've been involved with usually means that maybe one or two of my friends who happen to also be blind or visually impaired or otherwise disabled participate in the same kinds of campaigns that I do, because we're doing so because for us, at least, some of the big issues are disability related, so we tend to gravitate to the same candidates and find one another putting together disability caucuses and those kinds of things in support of those candidates. Generally speaking, I frequently feel like the lonely little petunia in the onion patch when it comes to being involved in these campaigns. I think the first serious campaign for somebody else I was involved with was a mayoral campaign. And my job as a volunteer, as were many others, were peeling and sticking addresses onto envelopes and manning phones in campaign headquarters, and making those last-minute calls to get people out to vote, and arranging for transportation for those who requested transportation as a result of a disability or age. Those were skills I was perceived to have. I eventually found myself on a campaign committee for a successful mayoral candidate, but I was still there representing the disability community rather than myself as an individual. And I'm not sure that's such a bad thing, because most of the others in the room represented some constituency, whether it be a particular racial minority or women or business people, but it's some subset that they were there representing, not just themselves. So I didn't take offense by it. I do think that not enough people with disabilities are involved. When they are involved, they're involved because of their disability rather than because of their citizenship in and of itself. I certainly know that the politicians that I've shook hands with and had a chance to speak with who were campaigning instantly wanted to tell me about their record and their intents in terms of dealing with persons with disabilities. One of my biggest horror stories in that experience was a gentleman from Oregon who was running for re-election to the U.S. Congress, and he happened to be the current chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, so he's a very powerful man at the time. And I attended a fundraiser at a state senator's home in support of this guy's candidacy, and he came and put his arm around my shoulders and says, I always vote for benefits for you people. And I was just horrified. And needless to say, my sponsor there, the state senator, explained to him that I was fully employed, was not currently on benefits, felt benefits were of value to those who needed them, but that it was part of the stereotype that I was fighting against, to assume that if I was a person with a disability, I needed to taking care of in that kind of fashion. It didn't quite cause me to change political parties, but I can honestly say that gentleman did not get my vote and in fact lost that election.
Yeah, it's interesting how politicians perceive those of us who are disabled, no matter what we get involved with them about. One of the roles that I've played in Florida is I've been pretty involved on educational issues, really mainstream educational issues, and it's actually been pretty hard for me to persuade politicians to look past my disability and listen to my arguments about mainstream post-secondary education. It can often be a major irritant, I think, for me anyway, to see how politicians and people in political campaigns tend to perceive you as only having self-interest and only being there because there is an expectation that you're going to, in fact, gain something by being there for the population that you're perceived to be involved with, and that's almost always, in our case, the disability population. And I think that's actually one of the factors that's limited my involvement in campaigning, because I didn't necessarily want to be perceived as just someone who has interests in disability issues, and really wanted an opportunity to speak out on some of the broader issues that at least I feel like I've qualified to have an opinion on based on my education and my involvement and my life experiences. I think a lot of us, Brian, and you may want to comment on this as well, I think a lot of us actually become involved tangentially in politics because we're working on issues that don't just operate at election time, but operate all the time. You, for instance, serve on a Watertown Disability Commission. I've served on a number of state boards as well as on the Miami-Dade Commission, which I've chaired, Commission on Disability Issues. And we've kind of become involved in campaigns for that reason as well, because we've been working on a whole range of issues through those groups, which have indirectly touched politicians. And so maybe that's another way that people with disabilities actually do get involved in campaigns, Brian.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Case in point, I spoke before my town council a couple of times on issues as a result of my involvement with the Commission on Disability, dealing with audible traffic signals, dealing with access to city-produced documents in accessible format, those kinds of things, snow removal, and a bunch of others. And because they recognized me from speaking in that respect, when I showed up at the town Democratic caucus, where they were selecting individuals to represent our area in the state convention, I was invited to be a delegate. Now, that would not have happened had they not seen me speak on issues. I would hope, but there's no way to tell in this, that not only was I filling some kind of need on the part of the people doing the selecting to have a well-balanced group, you know, men, women, persons with disabilities, persons of racial minorities and the like, but that I was an articulate spokesperson for whatever issue I cared to speak out on. I didn't see others in the room who had disabilities putting their name out there, but I do think that the fact that they had seen me before in that kind of a public forum helped in that selection. There are other times when we go to Washington, D.C. and march up and down the aisles of Congress looking to speak to senators and the like, that I've met individuals there who later have given me entree to the political machine of campaigning politicians. I did participate in the John Kerry campaign here in Massachusetts when he was running for president, and got to a point where he'd call me by first name among the many thousands of people who he was busy courting, and knew my issues and made a point each time that came up that we were in contact, that he'd remind me that he understood my issues and more than just passing by saying, concerns of persons with disabilities, but getting down to the nitty-gritty. Same thing for gubernatorial candidates and the like. I was at a forum held over at the Perkins School for the Blind during our gubernatorial races up here, and had some issues I wanted to discuss with the gubernatorial candidate who eventually was elected. And John Kerry was the one doing the introductions. And when I wanted to ask a question and they had run out of time, he stopped the clock and allowed me to get my question in because he recognized me. There's real value in that over time and having an impact on a number of issues, not just disability issues, but actually when there's so many people clamoring for your time, anything that gives you a bit of a leg up can really help your causes.
And it actually is amazing what good memories politicians have. I had remained relatively out of state politics for the last few years, and an issue came up about 2 years ago where a bunch of us ended up getting on the phone with the majority leader in the state Senate, and he's a guy who I had worked with maybe 10, 12, 14 years ago, and there were a bunch of people who perceived themselves, and probably quite rightly, as far more important than I was in the scheme of things, who got on this call with him. And the person who he kind of yelled at and said, gosh, it's been too long, and da-da-da-da-da, was me. And he said to everybody on that call, I've worked with this person in the past. I admire his mind. I trust his political judgment. So until and unless he tells me that this is a good idea, I'm not even going to listen to you guys. Kind of a surprising thing to hear. What it indicates is that you do store up manna in heaven, if you like, by your actions earlier, and sometimes really aren't even aware that you're putting this kind of stuff aside. And it does count for your issues, because the fact is that he was prepared to introduce a bill that we really needed to have introduced, not only to introduce it, but to guide it politically and to give it his support, based at least in part, certainly not entirely, but at least in part, on the fact that we had had a relationship in the past where he felt he'd been treated well, where he felt that I had delivered what I promised for him. And so it very much was and is a quid pro quo.
From ACB Radio Mainstream, you are listening to Tuesday Topics. If you have comments about the show or a suggestion of a topic you would like to have discussed, send a message to TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. That's TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. Once again, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Well, Brian and I have talked backward and forward. There are a couple of other folks here. I don't know if they're inclined to jump into the fray, perhaps with questions for Brian perhaps with experiences of their own. So let's open it up and see what people have to say.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I have never run for public office or supported physically a candidate for a public office, but I have some experiences with voting for candidates, and I have more of a conservative, upbringing, or maybe the way I believed, but sometimes I feel that maybe blind population or disabled population is helped more sometimes by the liberal wing of a party, but I think that that depends on a lot of things. Like, Bill Clinton did help us a great deal with the disability of concerns, and also I think that Bob Dole probably would have done a fair job of that too, because he is disabled and had some background in the disability concerns area. And I think it's great that John Kerry and some of the others have paid attention to those concerns that Brian had mentioned, and that's the way I think that it should be. I'm wondering maybe sometimes if liberals tend to maybe feel paternalistic about the concerns of disabled people.
Gary, you mentioned direct contribution, and one thing Paul and I failed to mention during our original back and forth is the value of being a financial contributor to a campaign. I know that I'm called all the time to support a party. I get letters like anybody else who's ever made a 2-cent donation to anything to please donate again. And I get letters from the big-time party people to donate to the general slush fund to support members of that party wherever they may be running in the country. I tend to avoid those kinds of one-size-fits-all contributions and give contributions to specific candidates. So I guess in that regard, I'm a bit of an independent. Though I can honestly say that $99 out of 100 that I donate tend to go to Democrat candidates as opposed to Republican candidates, because they're the ones who have traditionally supported the issues I've cared about. But I do think that there is value in making a personal financial sacrifice to support political candidates who support your kinds of issues. They really do pay attention to who's donated to their campaign when it comes time to answering calls and letters. They may all deny it. They may say, we're not elected by those who contribute to our campaign. But in the same way that it's a bit of who you know, it's also a bit of who you financed that will get you a little bit farther down the line. Maybe that makes me a cynic in U.S. politics, but I think that it's a fair statement.
Brian, you responded to a couple of Gary's issues, and I'd like to respond to two more things that Gary raised. One of them is, who do disabled people support? And for me, that's actually been a fascinating issue. Certainly, traditionally, disabled people were Democrats. But one of the things that fascinated me was that in 2004, a majority of the disabled population appears to have voted Republican, certainly appears to have voted for George W. Bush. And it's fascinating to me what made that happen. And it will be fascinating to me to see what happens in 2008. And the other issue that I wanted to raise that Gary touched on and that Brian talked about a little bit as well, people who get elected who are disabled themselves, that has happened some in this country. And I know that, speaking for myself, and I guess I'd like to ask Brian to comment on this as well, I'm often very impatient with people with disabilities who get elected, because it's almost as if many of them believe that they can't afford to be disability champions because they will be perceived as one-issue folks, and that instead they have to almost appear to eschew disability issues and make their reputation on other things. And while I can see part of that, I guess for the most part it angers me a lot, because if they think that their disability had nothing to do with getting them elected, they need to rethink that. And if they think that disabled people didn't actually play a part in making that happen, they need to rethink that too. So what do you think, Brian, about disabled people who get elected and then appear to pretend not to have disabilities at all?
I think it's as silly a thing as a person of color being elected and then to make a real point of not being involved in issues dealing with racism of any kind. I do think it happens more times than not. I would like to have believed that had Senator Dole been elected president, that the fact that he was a person with a disability would have had an effect on his policy-making decisions. I have to tell you that I was disappointed with how virtually all of the graphics that showed him, none of them showed him in a light that allowed you to see that he was an amputee, that always it was full arm extended rather than the missing arm exposed by an empty sleeve. And I found that kind of offensive. I'll tell you, I found the fact that we had to fight to get FDR shown in a monument as being a wheelchair user. It's the same scenario where we had to avoid being perceived as a person with a disability because that meant that our minds went on vacation as well and our ability to reason. Wouldn't it be wonderful to live in a society where, being a person with a disability, you were allowed to champion those things you knew a lot about disability, but not be turned into a one-issue person by those that you work with day in and day out, and by the electorate, and the competition for your re-election? But I'm afraid that perception is run by the media and, to some degree, by the campaigns who choose to allow those kinds of things to happen.
Hello, this is Jeffrey Turner in Boston, and I intended to participate tonight primarily as a lurker, but I find myself a little curious about a topic, and that is the accessibility of the political process itself. The reason I raised the question is because I've been introduced to the Unity 08 movement, and the intent of that movement is to establish not a third party, but to get on the ballot in all 50 states with another ticket, an alternative ticket. And the criterion that they pose is that there be a candidate from each of the two major parties, or I suppose an independent would qualify, but that there be a Republican and a Democrat, or a Democrat and an independent, or an independent and a Republican. But at any rate, it would be a split ticket, and that the idea is to stop the bipartisan bickering that our current system has generated. And the reason I find this approach to be appealing is the basic issue itself of bipartisan bickering, but also the unprecedented accessibility to the process that they offer. The Unity 08 movement is primarily an internet movement, and their website, www.unity08.com, is very accessible, and I just wonder if anybody else has been exposed to them and if they have any opinions or have anything to say about the accessibility of the political process itself beyond voting, but to the point of participating.
Jeff, I can't honestly say that I've paid much attention to it at this point.
I have really virtually no experience of Unity08.com, but we'll certainly take a look at it. Let's talk about the accessibility of the political process, because it's an interesting question. One of the questions that we might ask ourselves is, to what degree have blind people not gotten involved in campaigns because those campaigns have, for the most part, not been waged in accessible formats. One of the reasons that we were interested in 1991 in forming a Democratic caucus was creating access both at the state level and at the national level to the Democratic Party platform, which we felt it was a shame was not, in those early days, easily available to people with disabilities. I think the internet has made a huge difference in terms of creating a great deal more accessible material. It certainly hasn't solved the problem, because time and time again, when I look at party releases, when I look at approaches that are being taken at the federal level to things like bill markup and a range of other components, I'm very disheartened, because entities that pay lip service to accessibility and who pass laws that in fact create 508 do not live up to that either as political parties or, in fact, as politicians or the government. I continue to think there's a lot of work for us to do, whether as ACB or as individuals, to try to create an ongoing and continuous awareness of the need to be certain that the documents we're putting up on websites are in fact fully accessible, because right now we're certainly not at that point.
I do think that the electronic age is going to lend itself to more participation by those with disabilities, because I really do think that computer technology is a field leveling experience.
Jeff, have you had any experience looking at websites for the major parties, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans, and do you have any comments on their websites?
I haven't done any of that research. The most I've done is visited the YouTube page just this week with the Republican debates. I was able to get a little bit of that, but not too much, because my DSL connection is not fast enough to really support that kind of video streaming.
One of the fascinating things that's emerged for me over the past year or two is the way that the internet has changed the way that political parties operate. A lot of the political party sites are actually pretty accessible, and most of the documents the parties want you to take a look at are actually pretty usable. One of the things that's fascinated me, though, is how many ancillary sites, maybe, that is, how many issue-oriented sites are emerging that are often put up there by political parties, and then there's an equal and opposite issue website put up by the other political party. It's fascinating to me that the traditional party websites, whether we're talking about the state one or the federal one, don't seem to be where much of the campaigning and the politics lies any longer. One of the things that I would raise, I guess, and leave open for comment by folks who might be interested in commenting on it, is the degree to which truth is so much harder to find nowadays. 10, 15, 20 years ago, the media were supposed to deliver news in an objective way that would be open to both sides. And the last thing that you'd expect to find as part of a newscast was bias or open bias. And if you did find it, it would immediately be kind of pulled by the network, and the person who exhibited that kind of bias would get reprimanded. The same thing's true, it seems to me, with political rhetoric and the political use of the internet. There are more and more issue sites that purport to be independent and that purport to be research entities, but who in fact are carrying an immense agenda, usually for one or other of our political parties. I don't think that either political party is free of guilt in terms of encouraging the emergence of huge numbers of issue-oriented websites and blogs and so on, which are essentially set up to attract folks who would not probably go to a political party's website. Jeff, I'm going to, if I may, ask you to tell us a smidge more about how you actually got involved with Unity 08. Did you hear something about it on television, or is this something that you actually found on the internet and cultivated from there?
I wish I could remember. I think it was probably something that I ran across in the news. I don't know whether it was in a newspaper or I know Newsweek has done some coverage. They had a story about it. And I think that what appealed to me initially was this idea of levering technology. What intrigued me initially was the idea that they're going to leverage the internet and open the process to people through the internet in a new and potentially groundbreaking manner. My involvement has been to send some email out to people that I know and encourage them to take a look at it. And I also registered as a delegate, which I had never been involved as a delegate to anything before. And if the convention, if this movement gets enough of momentum started and there does in fact happen to be a national convention, apparently I'll have the ability to vote as a delegate for whatever ticket is put up there. I did have an opportunity to propose my own ticket. I did so, and I doubt very much that my ticket is going to be the final ticket when the convention happens, but I did feel like I was participating, and I know that there are forums available where you can look at issues and propose potential debate questions that will be put to the candidates when there is an online debate. And it just gives me entree to the political process that I just don't feel like I have dealing through the Republicans and the Democrats and the independents.
I'm still a little at a loss, and maybe you can help. I mean, you're obviously not an apologist for these guys, and that's not my intent. But there are some of us, at least, who would actually like to see, say, the Democrats and the Republicans more defined, with differences more obvious and absolute between the two political parties. And there are a number of us who would regard it as a bad thing and who fear the fact that the Democratic Party moves to the right while the Republican Party moves to the left. And so we find ourselves often, when it comes to presidential politics, at a place where presidential campaigns have determined what they think America wants and are promising to deliver, so that the two parties ideologically appear to be very close together. And if I'm understanding what you said, Unity 08's objective is to homogenize political opinion even more, and I'm wondering what makes that good for the U.S.
I don't know that their goal is to homogenize the political landscape. I think their terminology is more along the lines of stop political bickering and become more effective at getting things done. Maybe that's another way of saying homogenize the political landscape. But when there are hundreds of federal judgeships where appointments haven't happened just because it's a political football, and when we have a court system that's totally backed up and things aren't working, when politics are getting in the way of things being of things getting done in an efficient manner, I think that's what they're trying to address. Who knows? Maybe that's homogenization. I don't know. The interesting thing about the third party movement, I felt terrible that I had voted for Nader, even though Massachusetts went for Kerry totally. But the idea that Gore lost the election because Nader was present was weighing quite heavily on me for quite a while, until I heard Ralph Nader speak for himself, and he was totally non-apologetic. He did an excellent job at defending his right to run and on the issues and stand up and ask for people's votes, and he totally rejected the idea that he stole more votes away from Democrats than he did from Republicans. It certainly is controversial, but I find it intriguing. I find it very appealing to have, like I say, entree into the process.
Jeff, I think that there is real validity in the concern, I think, of a lot of Americans that we've polarized, that polarization has been largely on party lines, and it may be the fault of the nature of a two-party system that that's occurred. I'm disappointed that there seems to be less and less honor, if you will, in compromise and getting two-thirds or three-fourths of the potential voters in the Senate or House behind something rather than doing just enough to get a bare majority. And so much of that tends to be, like you say, along party lines. So I can see why so many people feel disenfranchised with a two-party system that has become so polarized as it has. Our form of government, I think, is very much not in keeping with the idea of a ticket that has a member of either party on it at the same time, because the vice president doesn't share any duties with the president. Rather, he or she is the substitute if the existing president is no longer capable of holding office. I think that would put an awful lot of pressure on Congress, whoever the controlling party of Congress is, to look for reasons to impeach the president in order to seat the vice president. If the vice president was a member of the party of that controlled Congress, I think I also wouldn't want to have the life insurance policy on the reigning president. With some of the crazies that are in our society out there who may feel the best way to put the other guy into office who is a agreeer with his particular brand of party politics. So I will worry a little bit that that kind of thing would happen. I think we'd have to have a fundamental change in our Constitution to change the nature of the vice presidency for that not to become an issue.
Brian, I think I agree with much of what you're saying. I would make one comment on the two-party system that is at least a little bit at odds with yours. I don't think what we've seen over the past few years is polarization. I think we've seen political division and bickering and a lot of actions that have been dictated by pure politics and not by good sense. So I certainly understand some of the issues that Jeff is making. But I think the two parties have actually come closer and closer together. Perhaps their mere closeness leaves more room for some third-party politics and third-party folks out there. We are about out of time, ladies and gentlemen. We have spent our evening talking about political campaigns. Let's go around really quickly, see if people have one or two sentences they'd like to add on the issue of becoming involved in political campaigns. Then we will wrap things up.
Well, there's a gentleman that I had never met. He was at the local Council for the Blind. His name is Doug Spade. He's from Adrian, Michigan. He's a Democrat. I would like to have heard what he had to say, see if he was interested in our concerns. He's totally blind. But a thing I might say about what Brian mentioned about someone from the opposing party, I think when Lincoln was president, and when he was assassinated, Andrew Johnson was a Democrat. Lincoln was a Republican.
Good point, Gary. Jeff, final thoughts for us?
The only thing I regret we didn't have time to address was another topic totally, and that is the difference between issue orientation versus character. And if I could be assured that the character of any given candidate were strong and reliable and honorable, I would probably I would give serious consideration to voting for that person regardless of what their party affiliation is, because I think that's so much more important. And to have a government where I know that scientists will not be told they cannot talk about global warming despite the facts and that kind of thing appeals to me greatly. And I don't know how we get access to that kind of an assessment given today's political structures.
thank you all for being here with us this evening. I've enjoyed the discussion, the debate, and I do think that there is a role for persons with disabilities to play in politics, American style, that only ends at the ballot box. Well, I can't even say that it ends, but that it begins with the announcement of candidacies, the selecting of candidates, our involvement in their campaigns, both in terms of that check in the mail as well as contributed time carrying signs and making phone calls and stuffing envelopes. I really do hope that more people with disabilities get involved, because I only think that politicians and statesmen are going to concern themselves with issues we as individuals and as a society want to support if they see that in turn we've supported them in getting the position they hold.
Someone said that a people gets the government that they deserve, and I think that that's particularly true in terms of democracy. If we're going to get the government we truly deserve, which in my view ought to be and is the very best government we can manage, each and every one of us needs to become involved in political campaigns, because only by truly becoming a popular exercise does politics make sense. I continue to be amazed at the fact that well under half of those who are registered to vote actually do vote in most elections in this country. I don't know if I have a solution in terms of what we can do about it, but I'm absolutely convinced that one of the groups who, in the past anyway, has gradually, and not so gradually in fact, increased its numbers at the polls are people with disabilities. And I'm satisfied that part of that reason lies in the fact that more and more accessibility has been built in to the political process. It's up to us, however, to assure that more people with disabilities become actively involved in helping politicians, whether mainstream or disabled, to become elected. Thank you very much for tuning in this evening. Remember, our new email address is TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. If you have thoughts based on this program, please, by all means, drop us an email and let us know. In the meantime, thanks very much for listening. Good night, and remember, you're likely to hear more truth on ACB Radio than you will from politicians.
And that's Tuesday Topics for this week. To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's 2 hours universal on Wednesday. The program is conducted in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. That's ourplace.acbradio.org. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer's sound card. A few minutes before each program begins, those who are online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer any questions you may have about the chat room client. An announcement about the show, including the topic to be discussed, will be sent out early each week to the ACB Radio Friends List. If you have comments about the show or a suggestion of a topic you would like to have discussed, send a message to TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. That's TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. So we hope you will come and join us each week on Tuesday when Tuesday Topics is recorded. We'll look for you in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. Tuesday Topics is a production of ACB Radio Mainstream.